Hello and welcome to the latest Science and Sport podcast. I'm your host Matt Solomon, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Joe Neal. So Joe is a strength and conditioning coach who's been working in the private sector in Detroit for the last 17 years, where he works predominantly with baseball and hockey athletes, from youth all the way up to professional level. So who better today to discuss how you can improve your hockey performance than Joe? So without further ado, it's time to welcome him onto the show. So Joe, welcome to the Science and Sport podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. So can you give us a quick introduction as to who you are and what you've been up to until now?
Oh, it's always a good question for me. I have a really untraditional background. Started out just as a college player in the States. And at that point, and when I was getting done, I was looking at how underserviced at that time it was, late 90s, early 2000s. And I wanted to help service guys like me. So I started training guys. I started in a trailer. I used to take anybody that I could train and bring them out to parks and things like that. And it was good. And it kind of built up. And over the time, I've collected a lot of clients. And now we have a good business here in Detroit, Michigan. And we're servicing mostly hockey and baseball athletes, and we have some different soccer and lacrosse is also starting to become a booming sport in our area. But for the most part, we service rotational sport athletes and been doing it for about 17 years. Probably for the last 12 plus years, I've been working with NHL and MLB players from the area also. So it's my quick story.
Absolutely excellent, mate. So obviously we're here to discuss hockey, the demands of that, and how you go about making sure that players are in peak physical condition for it. So before we get into the details of what's going on there, can you talk us through what the requirements are for hockey? Because obviously it's different from a lot of other sports. You're on ice. There's a different kind of momentum that comes with moving on ice. So talk us through how that differs from, for example, a field sport when you're running lacrosse, for example.
Well, I think hockey's a really, really interesting sport because of the surface that it's played on. It's ice, right? It's frictionless. It's very different than your field-based surface. And I think one of the things that we need to understand first is what are the physical requirements of that, and then we'll kind of play into how the surface kind of plays into that. So first of all, in an NHL game, going back a couple years, we started to look at how much total distance, like what are the requirements, physical requirements of these guys to actually play the game. And at that time, these guys were moving about almost 3 miles in a game, a total distance covered. That's about 4,600 meters. And what's interesting, the low hanging fruit to that is like, what are we looking at as far as intent goes? So about half of that time, that was very low intent. So guys were gliding, kind of like a light jog, things like that. And then a little bit less than half of that, about 44% of that, about 2,000 meters, was at a little bit higher pace or a little bit sprint pace. And so when we look at how we want to develop our athletes, we need to know where we need to input some of that really high level training. So of the lower half, the high intent portion of it, about a quarter of that was just high intent sprints. So they were only covering distances of, I think it was about 800 meters of total sprint speed, total outright sprint speed the entire time. So when you look at guys training, a lot of coaches would 45 seconds. They're looking at the shift duration of the time that an athlete is out on the ice, and they're going, okay, I want to go as hard as we possibly can for that period of time. And yep, there is some context to that, and we want to do that. But at the same time, that's not really how the shift acts. So, a lot of these shifts were 8 second intermittent sprints. So it was 8 seconds on, float for 8 seconds, 8 seconds on, float for 8 seconds, roughly around that time. So I guess the point is that knowing that they're not outright sprinting all the time is going to change how we decide how we're going to train these guys. And so just to give you some quick context on how big that distance is, they're going to cover of an international sheet, which is about 200 feet, or an NHL sheet, 74 times back and forth in that distance. So they have to have a high level of aerobic conditioning too to be able to handle what they're doing on a regular basis. Those are the physical requirements. Now, how I would go about handling that is we'd have to have a guy who has a good aerobic base, who can handle that up and down of their heart rate, you know, and how they react to the time that they're on the ice. They'd have to have good anaerobic base, and they have to have a hell of a lot of strength in order to kind of work in the ice. Because speaking to the frictionless portion of the ice, these guys have to have a tremendous amount of strength to break their own inertia. All right, so what do they need to do to skate fast? Well, they need to hip extend, they need to have hip abduction, and they need to have hip external rotation in order to do that. And they have to do it as forcefully as possible over and over again, and almost work their blade to about 90 degrees of the direction that they're working, so perpendicular to the point in which they're facing to move. So that's the interesting part of hockey, whereas on field, your toes are pointing in the same direction that you want to move. And, you know, you want to have good force into the ground, but you're not going to stay on it for that long of a time. So those are kind of the physical requirements that we have to be a really high level hockey player. And that's what's going to having those is what's going to separate the average from the best.
Yes, it's really interesting that there's obviously more time to produce that force, right? So you've got more time to push away concentrically. There's maybe less eccentric and rate of force development in a stretch shortening cycle, for example, which you might get in a running sport. So that's a really interesting big difference immediately. And obviously, yes, aerobic base, anaerobic, those things maybe stay a little bit more similar between the sports. Yeah. I know you prepare your athletes based on the stress in the weekend as well. So can you talk us through how you go about doing that?
Yeah, so I think the best way to tee this up is to kind of discuss the four things that I want to do, and then I'll kind of break them down into like how we would do that. So the first thing we want to do is we want to create as much force as possible into the ground. So I think that's just a standard thing over a lot of sports now is like, I want to create a lot of force. There is a difference though, which you just mentioned. I think the second thing that I want to do is I want to create a better way to deliver energy for these guys. So how can we get them to go fast when we want them to go fast? How can we get them to recover when we need them to recover? An interesting part to hockey is the upper body part, the bulletproofing of their upper body. Because I think for the most part, people only think of hockey as like this lower lower body dominated sport. And that's just not the case. And I'll get to that in a second. And then finally is like, how can we build the biggest engine possible? How much horsepower can these guys have? What can they do with their bodies that are exponentially better than their counterparts? So going back to force production, it's interesting because in a field-based sport, we want to create as much power as quickly as possible. But that in hockey, that's not the fastest skater always. The fastest skater is really the person that's going to be able to place the most force in the ground and then also stay in the ground as long as possible, or stay in the ice as long as possible. So we want to create a longer impulse for these guys to stay in the ground or stay in the ice. And those guys who can kind of abduct their leg to the side and stay longest and then recycle that leg are going to be the fastest skaters. So their ground contact times are much, much longer actually as the skate goes on than it is when they start. They actually go to this three-step trot to a push and they revolve their leg back and forth, which is very different than how we are in sprinting. So we deal a lot in acceleration. We'll actually train an on-ice player in acceleration with things like heavy sleds and things that create longer ground contact times, because that's how it's mimicked on the ice. And I think that's a big difference, and that's how we'll prepare our guys. But in general, we want to get these guys to push as hard as they can in the ground. And one of the things in the force plate error, and so we use Hawken Dynamic force plates, which I mean, have been a game changer for us. We're able to create, I'm sure many people have talked about it on this. We look at a force plate metric as, you know, peak propulsive power. Peak propulsive power for us needs to be for an NHL player a minimum of 60 watts per kilo of body weight. And so that's going to be our measure on whether we think somebody's strong enough to be on the ice, because it's based on their relative, you know, on their weight. And so we get a lot of guys that are fast, who are smaller, but they can push really high levels of wattage. And we get some guys that are bigger, that are a little bit slower, that can't put as much force in the ground. And you can tell based on that whether somebody can keep up a lot of times. Now, what's interesting too about that is we can for every watt that we gain throughout an off season, we attribute that to like a 0.01 decrease in sprint time on the ice. So if we can get, you know, 5 or 10, we can almost take off of a hundredth of speed, which is very, in the sport of ice hockey, can be very, very life-changing, we'll call it, with these guys. So I think that force production is an easy piece for us to monitor on a regular basis and be able to show them direct tangible feedback. Okay, look, you know, this is where you're at right now. This is where we want to be. This is how much force you're putting in the ground. And I think the ages of like things like, you know, guys deadlifting all the time, which is a big part of what we do. That's just a small, you know, it's just a small tool for what, how we develop those now, where I think in the past, you know, 10 years ago, everything I was trying to hit with, you know, heavy deadlifts and power cleans and things like that. Now it's really changed because of the monitoring tools that, you know, people are putting in front of us that we're trying out. And it's really making our scope of practice a lot more narrow for these guys. And I think our response time and what we want to get back from them is way faster from that aspect. So, you know, that's the force production piece. From an energy system standpoint, we need to get these guys to be able to deliver power quickly. I love Aerodyne bikes. Those are, you know, those are one thing that we'll do, you know, 5 seconds max wattage bikes to see how fast we can do it. And then we'll give them that good recovery down. A lot of times we'll use heart rate intra workout. So we'll do a polar band with guys. And at that point we'll say, look, I want you to go as hard as you can for 5 or 10 seconds, whatever it might be. And then we're going to recover down to 120 beats, something that is kind of more normal, and then repeat that over a, let's say a shift, right? We have 4 impulses in a shift, 8 seconds, 8 seconds, 8 seconds, 8 seconds, you know, with letting them come down and let their body really figure out how to get relaxed in between, which is a huge problem, especially at the youth level for us. Everybody's trying to go as hard as you can, go as hard as you can. And their bodies really don't know how to respond and recover between shifts. So that's a huge thing that we deal with here. 45 on, a minute on, go as hard as you can, and they just can't get back down. And then they wonder why their speed endurance kind of drops off as second, third period comes. And the parents are like, oh, well, they're not in good enough shape. Well, maybe they don't know how to get their heart rates down, so they're not, you know, saving energy for later. So that's the energy piece for us. Bulletproofing the upper body. Funny story. I've been in baseball my entire life. Actually, in 2011, I did a deal with New Balance with our company, and I pitched them on why I was good for hockey. And at the time, I was only doing baseball. And so they were like, hey, we have this Warrior brand. We're going to do we have a bunch of Warrior athletes, so they have sticks and helmets and, you know, jerseys, stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, great. This is why I'm good for hockey. Well, I know how to fix shoulders. Well, at that time, the fourth leading cause of an injury in the NHL was a shoulder pathology. But the interesting part about that was it was the second most responsible for man games lost. And also, it was the second most expensive injury to fix for these teams. So that's how I got into hockey. I literally pitched them on like, hey, look, I'm really good with shoulders. I've been dealing with it, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years. And they took me on. And then I really, you know, as that kind of grew, hockey became really interesting. And so for people to seek me out. And this past year, just to give you an idea, there was like 140 people on the injured reserve list. Of that, about 46% of them were upper body related injury. And then of that subset, 10 of them were shoulder pathologies and 9 of them were season ending. So when I talk about how important preparing the upper body is for a hockey player, it's a collision based sport. These guys literally are going 25 miles an hour, or what would that be, like 32 kilometers or 33 kilometers per hour, and just running into each other as hard as they can. And if they don't prep their torso better, they're going to end up with, I mean, concussion. I mean, some of these guys would rather have a concussion at some point. And I know that sounds bad, but like, they're like season ending or a 7-day concussion. I don't know. You know, it's like, you know, and there's some guys that have really bad concussions, so I don't mean it like that, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you lose a whole year with some of these shoulder problems. So we want to really prepare our athletes for the compression that they go through, getting jammed into the boards, you know, open ice hits. I mean, it's violent how fast they're going. So last thing is, we want to build the biggest engine we can. How hard and how long can these guys go? And I know I said I want to recover these guys down, but I also want to, you know, really work into their lactic threshold and really see what their grit is like when they're training. And a lot of guys, I'll be honest with you, a lot of guys won't go to the extent that we want to ask them to go to, 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off, you know, these lactic threshold exercise regimes that we're asking them to do are very, very difficult. You put them on a 3 minute watt bike and they haven't been used to it, I mean, they're going to be on the floor for 25 minutes after they're done, you know? So those are the primary things that we're looking to do as we go through and try to develop our athletes to kind of condition to them what they're going to see on the ice.
I'm excited to get into exactly how that looks in your training in just a second. But before we do that, what does then a week look like? Because obviously they've got a game at the end of the week. And as we mentioned before, you want to deal with the stress of the game and prepare them based on what they're going to do in the game and how they are stressed during that period. So what does a week look like for these hockey players?
So in the off season and the in season, it could look very, very different. In the off season, an interesting part about the off season for a lot of NHL or aspiring NHL players is they still spend an exorbitant amount of time on their skill specific work. So when we develop off season programs, we need to really focus on how we integrate that into there. Because if they're spending an hour or 2 hours on the ice a day, we got to consider like they're going to get a lot of the aerobic and anaerobic stuff out of the way. And really more so, I would say the aerobic stuff, anaerobic stuff out of the way. But it really depends on the type of session they have too. So are they doing stick handling? They're doing small area games. Are they doing situational stuff? Are they working with a guy that's going to deal with more of their shooting ability or their positional play, that their tactical work, we'll call it? Those are all things that we have to take into consideration. So typically what I do is I backload the week in the off season. And how I do that is usually these guys will take the weekend off. Like Saturday or Sunday are going to be off days, but we'll work Monday through Friday through the off season and really building towards a speed grade, more of a faster twitch as we get closer to the preseason. In the off season, especially right after, we're going to try to build a lot of strength because they spend so much time in that speed portion of the strength speed spectrum throughout the year. So we're trying to build back some symmetry. Because it is an asymmetrical sport. They're always shooting on one side. They're always kind of leaning to one side. So we do a ton of isometrics throughout the week. But really the first part is going to, on a Monday, we're going to come in, we're going to do some multi-directional speed. We're going to do some prep work for Tuesday. Tuesday's usually like our biggest lift of the week. And I should say the biggest lift strength-wise. And as the week goes on, that gives them an opportunity to keep some energy in the tank so that they can still do their skill specific by the end of the week. Because if I exhaust them of all their energy early in the week, they're not going to have a ton left to really work on what they would consider more important. Most of my guys, and I don't know how it is with you, but listen, they're always sport first. And I've realized that I'm always going to be the passenger to their sport. But if I can help them stay on the ice longer, that's going to be really something that they're going to appreciate over time. And that's something that they know, like, hey, look, I can put in this little bit of time, I'm going to be able to do things a lot more powerful and be able to recover faster, things like that. So Wednesday, we'll typically have a therapist come in, work recovery. It could be a sports chiropractor, body worker, something of that line, do some recovery runs, tempo sprints, biking, things like that. Maybe some, you know, some, we'll call it sport yoga. I don't know if that's a thing or not, but maybe that is. But if somebody that's doing, you know, it's not going to be sitting in there and holding our fingers up and things like that. It'll be more moving through ranges of motion that they really need to see. Thursday, we're going to ramp it back up. Upper body rotational day, because the sport is very rotational in its foundation. They're twisting, they're turning. We do a lot of medicine ball work on that day. Friday is another sprint speed day, but we have a very dynamic approach to that. So we're doing jumps and plyos and things of that nature. And then Saturday, recovery modalities again. Maybe they're doing some Mark Pro, some H-Wave type work where they're trying to flush the system. And then Sunday is going to be an off day. We're trying to get them to eat as much as possible, you know, feed the machine. And then back Monday, we're going to wake them back up and get them going again on Tuesday for Tuesday. So that's our week layout.
And what about in season then? Because obviously in the in season, they're going to play at the weekend, right?
Yeah. Well, in season, you know, we could have guys, you know, we have NHL players that'll, you know, these guys will play 3 and 5 nights occasionally. That's not, but I would say the average is 2 and 7. So Tuesday, Friday, Sunday, somewhere in there. We will go through the hockey's not as hard as baseball, but hockey will go through and we'll try to plant in where we want to put these more of a micro dose at that point. So like we, you know, 20, 25 minutes, what are they not doing? They're not getting, you know, some powerful strength work that they're doing because they're doing that on the ice. So they're going to do their, you know, maybe a split trap bar deadlift. Maybe they'll do some pressing, some definite rowing, because we got to get those shoulders. They're so used to holding their shoulders out in front. They look like this when they're done with the year, that we got to give them some retraction, some T-spine, you know, some mobility in some specific areas. Example would be T-spine extension would be a big thing. They do a lot of rotating, but they don't do a lot of extending because they're always reaching down. I think an underestimated part of hockey is like they're looking down most of the time. So they really, really end up being super kyphotic, and we're really trying to bring them back. So just giving them ranges of motion that they don't normally have, I think, are a big piece of that. And then, you know, building in the strength work. But long story short, 20, 25 minutes, maybe 2 days a week in season, a lot of mobility. Also, we might do some isometrics. I really like isometric in season, 20 seconds, Copenhagen plank pinches, where you're going to push your knees together and get some groin, get those adductors lit up a little bit. Some split squat variation isos that are going to get the pelvis back to a little bit of symmetry, because they typically will start to lean depending on what leg they decide to favor. And through force play testing, we can tell that throughout the summer. Like this guy, you know, he's very propulsive on his right and he breaks really hard on his left. And that seems to be, you know, not that it's always that combination, but the closer we can get to some symmetry, the better. And I've never seen it like, you know, 50-50. It's always 48-52 or, you know, things of that nature. So those are things. And in season, we might have to also work into some aerobic conditioning too, to get them to be able to come back down, because they're spending so much time at the higher end of their anaerobic threshold. So getting them to learn how to flush some lactic acid, things like that. I'll tell you one thing that we've been really toying with in a lot of sports is blood flow restriction on the recovery end of it. I think that's been a little kind of a secret weapon. Like they come in after a game, do 10, 15 minutes of blood flow restriction on the legs and really learn to flush that lactic acid out on just a light bike. That's been a big thing. We do that for like other sports too, depending on, you know, the appendages that they're using and things of that nature. So I really like that as a thing for, we'll call it in season.
And let's say then that you've got two different players and you've got one who's played a full game, one who's played almost no minutes. How would you then differ that schedule? Because 25 minutes for a guy who's not done much, maybe you could do some more, right?
No, great question. So the guy that's not getting the minutes, he's almost going to do like a full session in the gym, probably the day of, so that they can stay on that one-to-one pace of like, this guy played a game, this guy didn't play a game, but he acted like he played a game. We've monitored a lot of junior clubs in our area, consulting with junior clubs around us, like USHL and things like that, OHL. And there's guys that don't get any minutes. We have to bring them in, because when they're called on to play and they don't have that capacity, they're not going to be able to keep up. So they'll be doing, we'll typically do a lot of bike in season. I don't love running all the time, because it just doesn't match the kinematics of a skating drill. And these guys typically tend to get banged up in their hip flexors. And at first I thought that was a little bit of a softer approach. I'm like, we got to run. But then I realized like, it really doesn't matter. The best conditioning they're ever going to do is on ice conditioning. Right. So like we really need to keep them just on the ice in the season. So for the 70 games or 82 games that they're going to play, depending on what level they're in, we'll typically choose a bike, could be a rowing machine, ski erg would be something that we could use, ropes, you know, to keep that heart rate up. And we'll use a polar monitor to do that. First beat is something that we've used a lot too, you know, during games to tell if we're getting good recovery with these guys. So if a guy does play and he doesn't have high minutes, we'll certainly be able to tell whether or not he's in good shape or not also.
Absolutely excellent. So when you bring all of this together, I'm interested to hear what a session with you looks like, right? So yep. Can you select one of those, because we've gone through like three or four different options, can you select yep. one of those options and just talk us through what a session with you looks like? They're going to come in the door, start a warm-up. What are you yep. doing?
Yeah, so let's see. Small case study might be the guy that's maybe underpowered, okay? Somebody that needs a little bit more wattage for him. He might come in. We might... at the start, we'll take him through, you know, some hip distraction and some self-myofascial release, get his joints opened up so he can get into better ranges. He's going to go through a dynamic warm-up. If we're doing lower body, we're going to hit some greatest stretch. We're going to hit, you know, in hockey, we get a lot of guys that don't have, like, great internal rotation of their hips. So we're going to hit some mobility in internal and external rotation. Glute mids get really, really toned up for these hockey guys because of the external rotation component. So we're going to do some pigeon stretches, things of that nature. In their prep block, we might start with some low amplitude pogos, maybe with you know, an aqua bag or something to create some proprioceptive nature to the exercise. Then we might do a trap bar. We love trap bar jumps on VBT, so we'll use velocity-based training. We'll say, okay, look, you're a 2.7 on your takeoff velocity. So from the bottom of the squat to the time that you get fully hip extended, we want that to be a 3. Okay. So when we look at that metric, we're like, hey, you want to be able to go 3 meters per second. So we'll take them through that trap bar jump and whatever weight that is, it could be 70 pounds. I mean, I've seen guys be able to move 270 pounds very fast. But whatever that metric is, we'll have them moving at the rate that we want them to based on their assessment. And then from there, I personally like a lot of anterior loaded or front squat type exercise. And the reason why is the hip joint doesn't get closed down at the bottom of the squat as much because the vertical torso helps open that up. So for me, I will skew towards a front loaded split squat, a front loaded, you know, regular bilateral squat, whatever the need be. And then we'll also at that point have a velocity. We really don't program towards weight anymore. It's more like, okay, I need 0.8, you know, if we're moving on a little bit more strength speed, 0.8, 0.7 meters per second, and we'll have them move it. We'll pair that commonly with maybe a Heiden or a lateral bound. Maybe throw in a anterior core because we feel like anterior core mixes well. So your abdominals or your some torso, you know, fitness in the front of your body, a plank or, you know, some kind of physio ball rollout with that. And then we'll probably polish it off with some sort of hinge drill for that day. So two dumbbell RDL or a barbell RDL, something like that, mixed with maybe another jump if it's later in the season. A single leg broad jump to a two leg land. I really like those with kind of talking back to creating a little bit more contact time. I really, really like those banded, not open. So in the hockey world, we'll do a lot of banded broad jumps, single leg, double leg, something like that to keep the contact time high. And then, we'll, you know, a little bit of core, finish off with some mobility and we're out the door. So, and if we need some conditioning, we might do that. Depending on the time, I might have, if I need to move fast, heavy sled sprints in front or behind, whatever it might work. But it really depends. We customize every single program to each athlete that comes in. So I don't really have like a blanket program for an individual, but that would be a good template.
Absolutely excellent. So Joe, massive thanks. I really enjoyed that. I think it's a great insight into the hockey world, but also things that you need to consider or things that the athletes really need to work on. Who are looking to increase their performance there. Where can people find a little bit more about you and what you're up to?
So I'm pretty active on, the only platform I'm active on is Instagram. It's Joe Neal 2, last name spelled N-E-A-L. And then we have our company is 2SB Sports. That's at 2SB Sports on Instagram. And I think that's it, Facebook. So those are the main two.
Absolutely excellent. So Joe, massive thanks for your time and effort today. It's been a pleasure talking. I look forward to speaking again soon.
Definitely. Thanks, man.
Cheers, buddy. And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks to Joe for all of his hard work on today's podcast. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you do at home too. Before you leave, I want to point you in the direction of the Science Sport Coach Academy. The Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses, which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. So if you enjoyed today's podcast and want to get some more great sports science information, all you have to do is you hit the link in the show notes in just a few seconds' time, and you can get into the Coach Academy completely free for the next 7 days. And of course, if you have enjoyed today's podcast, it would be fantastic if you could recommend us to a coach, a colleague, an athlete, or a friend. That means that we can keep bringing the best possible guests and the best possible content. And that's it. So again, a massive thanks from me. I'm Matt Solomon from Science of Sport. And I'll speak to you next week.